Live from CAP Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Memorial Day 2020, George Floyd took his last breaths as he begged for his life, and millions watched his excruciating final moments under Derek Chauvin's knee. 11 months later, what we initially thought was 8 minutes and 46 seconds was painfully longer, 9 minutes and 29 seconds. Former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin, guilty in all three counts in George Floyd's death, convicted of murder. But you already know that. Today, we're going to discuss what this rare moment means moving forward. Sacramento Police Chief Daniel Hahn is joining us to share his perspective on this historic verdict. Pastor Les Simmons explains how this is just one piece in a larger picture of justice. And Dr. Christy Hagans, who has spent the past 25 years focused on healing Black racial stress and trauma, offers resources for processing the tense uncertainty felt during and well after this verdict. But first, our colleagues spent yesterday and really the better part of a year listening to activists calling for accountability and justice in George Floyd's death. CAP Radio's race and equity reporter Sarah Mises-Tan and news editor Chris Hooks join us for more context and perspective. Welcome back to Insight.
Thanks so much for having me, Vicky.
Thanks, Vicky.
Sarah, starting with you, you went out right after the verdict and you took an immediate raw reaction. What did activists you spoke with have to say?
Yeah, in some ways, it was kind of an incredible privilege maybe to be able to speak with people right after this came out. We have been able to really build context throughout the year, and I've been speaking with a lot of these people, probably checking in about every month or so with just how things are going. I think relief is the one word that I heard a lot of them share. I think a lot of them were gearing themselves up to hear a different verdict and a more disappointing verdict. And so I think that they feel relieved. Sonia Lewis has been a part of racial justice efforts in Sacramento for years. And of course, she says she's watched a lot of other different trials and has seen a lot less unjust results come out of them. But she also says she doesn't believe that this verdict really means that justice has been served in the end.
Justice would be George Floyd being alive, that it's not enough just to incarcerate bad apples, right? When the entire system is guilty. Just since the trial's been going on, there's been a number of folks who have died by the hands of police. And I think that that's a testament to the fact that it's a public health crisis.
And Asante Waboykin, she's the co-founder of the Anti-Police Terror Project. She says the verdict doesn't mean anything will be different. She said that she personally hadn't been watching this trial very closely, as it just brought up a lot of past trauma for her.
The police are still murdering unarmed people. The police are still murdering unarmed people of color. The police are still murdering people that are unarmed, who are having mental health episodes. Like, people are still dying in police custody. There are still too many people in jail, people who need care that are incarcerated. There are people that are in jail because they're poor. Nothing has changed. We still have work to do. There is still fighting to be done. Yes, this is a victory, but the prison industrial complex is still the enemy of the people.
Many activists also mentioned that for Sacramento in particular, this trial, of course, feels pretty raw, as they feel that justice has still not been served for the officer accused of shooting Stephon Clark in Meadowview 3 years ago.
Yeah, clearly, Sarah, there's still a lot to sift through and a lot to process. You're actually going to be hosting a virtual conversation this evening. Can you tell us more about that?
Sure, yeah. And so for those who are interested, you can hear more from Asante Waboykin and also Sonia Lewis. We'll be hearing from a handful of activists who will be speaking to their experiences hearing this news and what they think are next steps going forward. So you can join us at 6:30 this evening.
And you could probably head over to capradio.org and send in some questions too, correct, if you want to be part of the conversation?
Absolutely. Yes. If you've got questions for these activists, please send it over. Send me an email. Join in.
CAP Radio's race and equity reporter, Sarah Mises-Tan, thanks for joining us again.
Thanks so much.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio, and if you're just joining us, we're getting a sense of what the Derek Chauvin guilty verdict in George Floyd's murder means moving forward. Chris, we're going to turn to you. This verdict is a culmination of not only nearly a year since Floyd's death, but this follows similar calls of racial justice and accountability, and you've really had the evening to kind of reflect and sit with yesterday's verdict, coupled with your coverage over the years. What do you think this means in the bigger picture?
Well, I think Asantewaa and Sonia put it pretty simply that this is, it's a moment of accountability for sure, but it's not a moment of justice. And that there's a lot more things to do. And I think you'll hear that from a lot of activists and organizers, both in California and nationwide. So I think it's certainly a moment to pause and take some deep breaths and sit in the moment. But I think as you ask activists and organizers who have been doing this for years and even decades, there's more to be done. And I think in the coming weeks and months and years, you'll see some more of that being done.
You know, when taking in yesterday's verdict and leading up to it and the uncertainty of it and not knowing what the verdict was going to be, inaugural poet Amanda Gorman, she really just kind of poignantly put into words this collective feeling while waiting for that verdict. She tweeted that the fact that we know what the verdict should be, but still remain unsure of what it will be, speaks volumes about our nation. We have work to do. How do you think activists are going to be moving this forward in terms of that work that still needs to be done?
Well, I mean, I think you saw yesterday, just a few hours before George Floyd's, the verdict in Derek Chauvin's case was read. I mean, in Columbus, Ohio, a 15, 16-year-old girl was killed by a police officer there. Hours after the verdict was read, people in Columbus, Ohio took the streets. I mean, that's what's going to continue happen moving forward as long as people continue to die at the hands of police officers. And as long as, you know, reforms that activists and organizers are pushing aren't met.
Finally, Chris, we're going to play a clip from Stephante Clark. Sarah touched upon this briefly when talking about Stephon Clark, who was shot and killed by Sacramento police officers back in 2018. He spoke with CAP Radio yesterday, Stephante is Stephon's brother, about the steps he wants to see happen, and if you can weigh in on that after.
Number one, bridge the gap between law enforcement and at-risk communities. Number two, I believe we need to do more in informing and educating the people on policy and legislative change. Number three, I believe to providing resources and healing spaces. We need the resources and healing spaces for those in our community. We need to receive recommendations from the community on how to prevent Stephon's and George's and Dante Wright's from ever happening again. And my last actionable item, which is, I think, my most important, is spread the gospel of love. Everybody, love everybody.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a good point on the last one. Everyone love everyone. That's how we move forward as a nation. That's how we move forward as a people. But I think some activists and organizers might disagree with his first point. Bridging the gap between community and policing is probably not the answer, is what I think a lot of people would say. That you look at some of the not just statewide and local work in terms of policing bills, but also legislation in Congress. You have two dueling bills right now, one called the BREATHE Act that would divest from policing and put more of that money into local organizations that would, say, respond to 911 calls. I mean, you have that locally here with Mental Health First in Sacramento already. And at the state level, you have, I mean, the legislative Black Caucus yesterday released seven bills that they said that California should take under that would, I mean, some of them would strip badges from police officers who commit certain crimes. Some, again, just like the one that I just mentioned, would divest from policing and use some of that money to have community-based organizations respond to 911 calls. That bill alone was vetoed last year by Governor Gavin Newsom. So some of these bills, they certainly address some of Stavante's points, but other ones, I think you would hear activists and other organizers say there needs to be more. There needs to be more divestment from policing and more investment into communities, which will help solve some of those points.
Chris Hooks is CAP Radio's news editor. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Thanks, Vicki.
Up next, Sacramento Police Chief Daniel Hahn shares his perspective on this rare verdict. And Pastor Les Simmons explains where we go from here and how we get there. You can join the conversation, too. Email us at insight@capradio.org or use the Twitter hashtag AskInsight. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, CAP Radio. I'm Vicki Gonzalez.
Hi there. If you're enjoying Insight, we think you'll love our podcast, Blue Dot, with your host, that's me, Dave Shlohm. Every week, we take a deep dive into science and nature, from the search for life beyond our pale blue dot in the vastness of space to the ecosystems we all depend on. You never know what you'll hear, from the physics of Leonardo da Vinci to communications with humpback whales. Check out Blue Dot wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. We're taking a deeper look at the significance of the guilty verdict in the Derek Chauvin murder trial of George Floyd and how this will shape conversations surrounding police accountability and racial justice moving forward. We're now joined by Sacramento Police Chief Daniel Hahn with his perspective. Welcome back to Insight, Chief Hahn.
Thank you for having me, and welcome to Insight for You.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here. You know, starting off, how did you feel when you first found out about the verdict yesterday?
Well, I didn't follow the trial, but obviously I watched the video when it first happened a year ago, and I thought that seemed appropriate to me that he got convicted of those charges, because what he did was, really kind of unspeakable for one human to another, but also somebody that represents what I represent, not the same exact uniform, but essentially represents law enforcement, could do that to another human being. So I thought it was very appropriate. And quite frankly, I wasn't surprised necessarily, but I was relieved.
Moments ago, our colleagues at CAP Radio, they shared the perspective of activists in Sacramento. And I want to give you an opportunity to respond to the idea that this verdict doesn't change a broken system. And although a relief in one sense, there's still more fighting to do.
Yeah, I think the verdict is great for accountability, and it shows that Chauvin was held accountable for what he did to George Floyd. But I would, I guess, be in agreement with the sentiment that you just expressed, that I think it's just that. It held somebody accountable in one instance. And accountability is very important. And I think there's some progress we can make in terms of accountability in law enforcement. But that's not the root of the issue. The root of the issue is, in our country, historically, we have had an issue with race and difference. And accountability is great, but until we start dealing with that in all sorts of manners, not just with law enforcement, because they're all interrelated, until we start dealing with that, until we know our history and know how we got here, it's going to be pretty hard to solve it.
As Derek Chauvin stood trial miles away from the courthouse, 20-year-old Dante Wright was unarmed and shot and killed by an officer who said she mistook her firearm for a taser. The first day of the trial, 13-year-old Adam Toledo was shot and killed by a Chicago police officer. And we would find that out a little over 2 weeks later once that body camera footage was made public. The fact that all of these are coinciding, what does this tell you?
Well, each incident is separate, so they aren't intertwined in terms of related to each other. But I think it tells a lot about our country. I think it tells a lot about the neighborhoods where these often occur in, and how those neighborhoods became the way they are and how they're not changing. And, like if you just look here in Sacramento, some of our largest diverse neighborhoods are some of our most impoverished neighborhoods. And I think if you ask people in our city how they became that way, people will say, well, people are just lazy, they need to get a job. But if we knew our history, we would know that's not how those neighborhoods came that way. They became that way because of decisions that were made by leaders, whether where to put freeways, redlining, and any number of housing discriminatory practices. And now those neighborhoods are the most violent, they're the most impoverished, they have the worst education systems, they have the worst employment systems, and many of those neighborhoods didn't used to be like that. And so until we start dealing with all these sort of things and how we got there, we're going to be challenged. And violence is increasing in our country. We've seen periods of time that have been extremely violent, both with officers and community violence. And just as an example, so far this year, the number of people shot in our city is up 333%. And so gun violence is not just, we don't just need to deal with gun issues with gun violence, although I would agree we need to deal with some of that, but also what is prompting people to respond with guns in our communities. And there's a lot of data on it. There's a lot of history behind it, but we don't tend to want to deal with that.
What is law enforcement's role in all of this and in all of those deeper issues that you were just talking about?
Yeah, I think we have an important role. We're not the only ones, obviously, but you know, we have a tremendous amount of power, which is, I think this issue is much larger than law enforcement, but the reason why we concentrate on law enforcement a lot of times is the amount of power that an officer has. There's no other job in this country, in my opinion, at the neighborhood level or at the street level that has more power than a police officer. And that is the power to take your freedom away or the power to take your life away. And that's about as biggest power I can think of in our country. And so I think we can be a leader in these efforts to change our neighborhoods around, change the outlook of our communities and the hopes and dreams of the people that live in our communities. And a lot of that is tied up in our history and with issues of race and bias. And I think we can play a large leadership role in all of that.
When our colleagues were going out yesterday following the verdict and talking to activists at Cesar Chavez Plaza and throughout the city of Sacramento, Stavonte Clark was there. And we actually had Stavonte on our show on Monday. We actually talked with him on Friday as he was in Minneapolis. I know the two of you at times have collaborated and worked closely together, but he and activists believe that justice was not served in his brother's death, that the officers were not charged, they were not fired. And I understand that you don't have the authority to charge or fire officers, but I do want to give you an opportunity to address that since it was brought up on our show.
Yeah, I have no doubt that the family would feel like that. You know, I talk to Grandma Sequita regularly, and we have made it a distinct point to treat this family with honor and dignity, and we will continue to do that. They lost a loved one. I've lost a younger brother. So I understand how they feel. The reality is this was investigated at the local level, the state level, and the federal level. And they all said it was within the law. And so, but I completely understand how they feel that way. And so we will continue to move forward and honor that family and treat that family with dignity and respect because they lost a loved one. And that's tough on any family.
Finally, Chief Hahn, you're the police chief of your hometown. You're the first African-American police chief in Sacramento, the city history. Having dedicated really your adult life to law enforcement for more than 30 years, with that perspective, what still needs to change?
Well, we need to change as a country. So to think that law enforcement can change and be completely different than society at large is where we often fall short. So we hire from society and we live in society. So to think that whatever's in society would not be in the police department because we have a 6-month academy and a field training program is just kind of naive. And we need to say in our country that we have a history that is very discriminatory towards certain groups and that still impacts us to this day. And it still shapes our beliefs about people and neighborhoods and groups. And until we start dealing with that, we are going to continue to have problems. But even with that said, we deal with that a lot in the police department. We have I teach a history class. We have organizations that come in and teach history and implicit bias. We have programs where our officers expand their experiences into neighborhoods and groups of people that maybe they didn't grow up with before they put the uniform on. And we spend a lot of time dealing with that issue as just as we do with teaching you how to shoot your firearm and teaching you the laws of the state. And I think that's important. But if we only do it in the police department, we're going to still be challenged. And this is at the root of what ails us as a country. So we are a country that says the people that break into the Capitol, groups like Proud Boys or Oath Keepers or things like that, there is a significant segment of our country that calls those groups patriots. But yet when it comes to Colin Kaepernick, who kneels during the national anthem, or a young 18-year-old African guy that shoots and kills two people at the mall, we call those groups savages or unpatriotic. And if they don't like this country, they can get out. Yet we call a Kyle Rittenhouse that shoots and kills two people in Kenosha, Wisconsin, we call him, well, we say he has mental health problems or family problems. And just, we need to ask ourselves, what do you do with somebody that's a savage versus what do you do with somebody that has family problems? And there's really one different, I mean, the circumstances are a little different, but one is white and one is black. And so we have to deal with those things because it shapes how we respond in situations. And so we are going to continue to do that in the police department. I hope we really tackle this issue as a country, because we've kind of ignored, shaded the truth, lied about the truth, and those sort of things throughout our history. And if we're going to get better for all people, we have to accept where we've been and deal with it.
Sacramento Police Chief Daniel Hahn, thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio, and if you're just joining us, we're discussing what the Derek Chauvin guilty verdict means moving forward. We're now joined by Pastor Les Simmons with South Sacramento Christian Center. Pastor Simmons' role in the community really goes well beyond the church. He offers programs at the Simmons Community Center with a focus on reducing violence, offering alternatives in the shape of youth, health, and wellness programs, and also at times he is right in the middle of protests. Pastor Simmons, thank you for joining us on Insight.
Thank you for having me here this morning, and I've been listening to the show, and I'm glad to be a part of this conversation as we kind of imagine what happens next after this verdict of yesterday.
And we are happy to have you, Pastor Simmons. How are you reflecting on the significance of this verdict?
You know, yesterday definitely was a moment to kind of release some air that we have been holding and watching. Every time we go through one of these kind of incidents where it's an officer involved shooting and then there's a trial, I think within our community, the Black community, we're all holding our breath for a moment of, will this be a time of accountability? And yesterday was a demonstration of that. And as I kind of surveyed my family and friends, you know, I heard my mom say, I cried yesterday. Because my heart still mourns for the Floyd family, George Floyd family, and then all of the rest of the officer-involved state-sanctioned violence that has occurred even over the last couple of weeks. We mentioned, you know, Dante Wright. We mentioned both Breonna Taylor, Micaiah Bryant, so many others, and then Stephon Clark, right? So yesterday definitely was a moment to release some air that we've been holding our breath, but it's also a moment to refresh and to say, okay, justice still needs to happen.
You touched upon your mom. What else are you hearing from the community, and what kind of support are you providing?
You know, we are at a place to where the community, from what I'm hearing, still is at a place of needing justice and accountability. Yesterday's decision was a rare one, of course. It's only been 7 kind of convicted murder charges for police officers since 2005 in our country, right? So it's a rare thing to have this accountability process. So for us, and what I'm hearing is it's a time to recharge and kind of double down on our efforts of reimagining a system that works for us all. I do, you know, hear Chief Hahn's words in lifting up this issue of race, which is a very important issue, and racism to address systemic racism to address. In addition to that, there's an issue of both continued accountability still in our state. 2019, August 2019, AB 392 was passed in our state as a result of Stephon Clark's death, you know, shot in the backyard of his grandmother's home. And that's still yet to be implemented. There's a real issue of accountability, a real issue of training, real issue of how we use equipment, how officers are using equipment. And we just saw that just the other day when this officer thought, apparently said she thought that she used her taser instead of a gun and killed someone.
Where do these conversations go from here? Where does this movement go from here following this verdict?
You know, for us, it's a continuum of organizing, staying involved in the process of ensuring accountability is happening, empowering the community to be at meetings where decisions are being made around policing in Sacramento, enforcement in Sacramento, and a continued commitment to advocating. Last year, we saw the world advocating for George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, and all the rest of the folks that have lives have been cut short. I know that there is a moment of fatigue, but yesterday was a kind of that charging of, okay, let's keep going. Let's build a system that works for us all. And so, you know, as we think organizationally and different spaces that I'm in, it's definitely a moment to lean in, to organize, to lift up our values, and to create a system of policing that's not built on warriors, but built on guardians, that's not built on immunity, but accountability, that's not built on officers that are not held accountable in these tragic accidents that we often see, but are held fully accountable.
Just a few minutes ago, Chief Hahn talked about how society's issues make their way into police departments. You know, they're not separated, they're intertwined. And because they hire people from within the community, from within society, as a community leader, as a pastor, and with a community center, what do we need to do to fix or change that?
Well, I think it's a lot that continually needs to happen, that not only is a part of the community, but also a part of training in law enforcement officers, hiring in law enforcement community. And I know that there's probably major challenges around hiring, but I think we need to continue to ensure that it's equitable, that it's very reflective. Our police force in Sacramento is very reflective of the community that it serves, is very present in the community, knows the community, and has relationships with community leaders, kids that are walking through the community as well. I think we need to continue to put that kind of pressure on to ensure that that's happening. I think we need to continue to create accountability measures, training measures, de-escalation measures that ensure these incidents like Stephon Clark incident doesn't happen, right? And then equipment, to make sure that the equipment that's being used is non-lethal and it's being used as a first approach to enforcement. There's a containment process and not a engaging and direct process, right? And it slows the process of these interactions that lead to these, you know, tragic officer-involved shootings down. It slows them down so a person could think. We are not, our community is not the monster here, right? We've seen incidents that have led to fatal incidents within our community that we're like, why did a person have to lose their life when these acts of great gun violence lead to an arrest? But in our case, in Meadowview, South Sacramento, and Del Paso, it leads to the loss of life. I think we have to do everything we can to ensure interactions with law enforcement in our community don't lead to loss of life on either side. But it's been leading to the loss of life, especially on the community side.
Pastor Simmons, you've been in the middle of some of the most emotional moments in Sacramento in recent history following the shooting death of Stephon Clark and the years since. I mean, I've seen you firsthand. You have played an instrumental role in balancing volatile moments. So with that perspective, what significance do you think this verdict will play? It is a rare verdict in the bigger picture.
Right. I think it's going to serve as a continued charge to advocate for a better system, one that's built with accountability, one that's built to protect lives. I feel that we have to continue to put our focus on a system that works for everyone. This is not a moment to kind of say, oh, you know, we've arrived. This is definitely not that moment. And I don't think anyone in our community would say that. This is a moment to say, how do we build from this? And why it shouldn't have to lead or be led by the death of another Black man or woman, right? Our kid, 13-year-old or 20-year-old. It shouldn't have to come as a result of the death of another person. But let's build on this. Let's create a system that works for everyone. Let's start changing even what public safety looks like. Let's reimagine that. Let's start empowering community leaders with more resources to be able to do violence intervention and interruption processes. Let's start investing in that, right? I think that's where we need to go. That's the path forward. And I think it requires us all to work together. It requires us to share our resources. It requires us to think bigger than what we've been thinking and support entities and organizations that are out there that are very in touch with the community, that have a way of de-escalating a situation, that have a way of being that cultural broker, right, that can cause a violent situation to stem down from it leading to a major incident. I think that's where we go.
Al Sharpton yesterday in his remarks, he made a point to credit young protesters and demonstrators marching with in response to George Floyd's death, contributing and playing a large role in this verdict is, and even charges, is marching enough to affect change?
Marching oftentimes leads to change, right? I think these protests leads to policy change, and we have to continue to both support and respect those that have put their lives on the line for their values and doing it in a peaceful way. I found myself at the forefront of multiple protests in many occasions, as you know, in 2019, I think March 20th, I was one of the ones on the 51st Street Bridge and one of the 84 arrested that day, peacefully protesting for Stephon Clark. We have to continue to do that. That does lead to that change. And for me, it's part of my kind of faith value to lift up my values of love, equity, justice. We've seen that from all the way from Dr. King on to today. The protesters that are out there today, especially here in Sacramento, lifting up those values in a peaceful way, they have a concern. They have an opinion, and it needs to be heard. I think once it's heard, you will see change in the streets. But because it isn't heard, there's a continued commitment to protest, a continued commitment to advocate. And once it's heard, once policies are made, once decisions are made that stop a life from being taken, protest begins to shift. I can't wait to get to that day, right? I think we all can. But it's definitely going to require some deep thought, some deep commitment to change, and then some implementation of the change that we talked about, such as AB 392. That has to be implemented. You've heard the Clark family mention that practically every day. You've heard the community mention that. Why isn't AB 392 implemented right here in Sacramento? I think when we listen, it begins to rest in the hearts and minds of people. And then next thing you know, change begins to come. I would end with saying, I don't think change can come without reform. If there's no reform, there's no commitment to it, then there's no change.
When it comes to that reform and policy changes, yesterday, Vice President Kamala Harris talked about the George Floyd legislation she put forward while still a senator. Are you optimistic that this verdict will ultimately lead to some policy changes at the federal level?
It should, right? That it was put up twice, I believe, last year and pushed out. I think if we really are serious about change nationally, this has to be put forth at that level. And then not only put forth, it has to be implemented. It has to be put into practice, into policy. The George Floyd Act, it has to be put into policy, put into implementation nationwide. I think once we do that, you will see the hearts and minds of people begin to ease and to say, you know, there's a system that is being built that is built to protect and serve all of us and not built to protect those that are meant to protect and serve all of us, right? And I think we have to put our best effort forth right now.
Pastor Les Simmons is with South Sacramento Christian Center. Thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
Still ahead, although the trial is coming to a close, there is still space for healing trauma. A psychologist and community healer focused on the African-American community offers mental health resources. You can join the conversation, too. Email us at insight@capradio.org or use the Twitter hashtag AskInsight. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.
Hi there. If you're enjoying Insight, we think you'll love our podcast, Blue Dot, with your host, that's me, Dave Shlohm. Every week, we take a deep dive into science and nature, from the search for life beyond our pale blue dot in the vastness of space to the ecosystems we all depend on. You never know what you'll hear, from the physics of Leonardo da Vinci to communications with humpback whales. Check out Blue Dot wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Insight on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. The death of George Floyd caught on camera and the world watched as he called out for his mother and saying so many times, "I can't breathe." No matter who you are, where you're from, watching that horrible murder of a man take place was no doubt traumatizing. The emotions, the sadness, the hurt, and for many people, especially in the African-American community, utter devastation. The range of emotions numbing at times. Our next guest is Dr. Christy Hagens. She's a community healer, African-centered psychologist, and founder of Safe Black Space, which focuses on Black mental health and awareness. Thank you for joining us, Dr. Hagens.
Oh, thank you. It's good to be here.
Dr. Hagens, can you put into context the impact that the George Floyd murder has had on the mental health of the African-American community?
Yeah, well, it's been profound and deep. Much of what you just described has been experienced by Black people nationally, internationally, right? When we think about what we've witnessed. And yes, everyone who saw the video, who's been following what happened to George Floyd and his murder has been impacted. But there's been an extensive and profound impact on Black people because there's a connection with knowing and recognizing him in ourselves, recognizing that could be me or my son, my brother, my uncle. And so there's a extended way in which Black people have felt depression, anxiety, been traumatized, felt numb in all the ways that others have. But again, as I stated, as a much deeper, impactful level.
Right. I mean, because the pain didn't start and it doesn't stop with George Floyd. There's a compounding nature of stress and years and decades and generations of racial trauma. Right. So how do you soften that? How do you process that with a healing mindset?
Well, I want to just acknowledge what you said, and I heard Chief Hahn as well as Pastor Simmons speak about that this is long-term, hundreds of years, systemic racism and oppression, and since our enslavement, right, that there's been this lack of seeing our humanity and valuing our lives. And so it is not as though I or anyone will have a quick fix or solution to the healing process. And yet part of it is recognizing that there are wounds that have resulted from the systemic racism and oppression and devaluing of Black lives. And so, you know, Alice Walker has a quote that I'd love to just quote or speak on, which is, She says, healing begins where the wound was made, right? That healing begins where the wound was made. And so part of it is acknowledging, yes, for Black people, because we know this has been our lived experience, right? But for the larger world and other communities to really honor that, rather than in some ways discount that reality. So that's one piece, is acknowledging that. I think, again, as people of African ancestry and Black people, in that is understanding that our history is still with us. And so the reactions that we may be having, our responses, are in many ways a normal or natural reaction to be being treated in an unnatural way, right? And so in that also is connecting with the value of who we are. So one of the things that I'm involved in, you spoke about, is Safe Black Space Community Healing Circles. And that's an opportunity for us as Black folks to come together with only other folks who are part of our quote unquote family, and having a chance to express, to vent, to cry, to experience whatever it is that we may be experiencing or going on with us, in a safe environment where we can do that with each other without having to protect somebody else's feelings or feel as though we may not feel comfortable expressing who we are. And in that as well, connecting with the true essence of our value as Black people, connecting with our spiritual sense, connecting with the values that our ancient African ancestors convey to us that are still part of who we are. And so it's again about beginning to re-engage with our own sense of Black self-love, and doing that with each other, and then creating some of the resources internally and community-wise that we can then take out to create change beyond our individual selves.
A few minutes ago, when having discussions with Sacramento Police Chief Daniel Hahn, as well as Pastor Les Simmons, Chief Hahn talked about how the issues, society's issues, they essentially make their way into police departments. They're not separate. However, Pastor Simmons said, in a quote, "Our community is not the monster here." When listening to both of those feelings and those arguments, what are your thoughts on that?
I think they both have value. I think that the quote from Pastor Simmons about the monster, that there is this way in which, again, Black skin, Black lives has been seen as, in many ways, and research even shows, right, historically as inhumane, as being violent, as being lazy, like all these descriptions of who we are. And so there's a way in which people may believe, I'm not racist or I don't have bias, but you know, research again around implicit bias shows that we're all kind of breathing the same air, experiencing some of the same stereotypes that are in some ways very conscious and other ways unconscious. And so it is an experience, I believe, that unfortunately, again, Black lives are seen as Pastor Simmons said, monsters. And that's not the truth. And yet because of that assumption, perception, we may be treated in ways that are not equal to others who are not Black. And that one quick example I'll offer is with the killing of, tragic killing of Dante Williams, with an officer thinking that she had her gun, or had her taser rather than her gun, to me is an example of implicit bias, that she perceived him, right, as a monster, as someone who was a threat, and rather than going with the actual taser, right? She instinctively at some level, implicitly, unconsciously, however you want to define it, but pulled out her gun.
There are multiple reports and studies showing that suicide among African Americans, especially youth, is significantly up over the last decade. The rate is increasing faster than any other community. Any thoughts on why that may be and what needs to change?
Well, I think it's tragic. Yes, the research is showing that, and it's really sad to think about anyone taking their lives, and particularly youth and Black youth. I think it's a result of lots of different reasons, right? That there are ways in which Black youth may not feel as though they have an opportunity to get support or help if or where they may need it. They may be feeling the pressures of kind of growing up in a world that doesn't value them. They may be experiencing social media The impact of the messaging that comes over social media. There was a study done a few years ago that, or in the last year or so, that talked about how racist ideas, particularly around Black folks, are being portrayed across social media, and that youth, because of their access to it, are witnessing or seeing experiencing racist events 8 to 9 times per day, right? And so that gets into your psyche, your sense of who you are. You begin to, at times, internalize those messages. So I think there's a number of reasons why the stats are increasing around suicide within the Black community and Black youth. And that I think part of, again, what needs to happen is putting resources into healing places and spaces and therapists that can provide the treatment that is necessary. And then also ensuring that not only the youth, but our adults and family members have the capacity to know how to deal with their emotions as they come up, so that they, again, can continue to be role models and support systems for those youths and for our families.
What can people do to help mitigate the stress of what's happening right now to the Black community?
Well, that's an interesting question, because with some of the work that I do, I will have folks say, well, how can I help? And what can I do, people who are outside the Black community?
Right.
And I think it kind of goes back to what I said at the beginning. Number one is believing that these issues are real, not discounting the experiences that folks are having. And then allowing us to do our own work, that we all have our healing to do. And so, you know, I support spaces that are specifically aligned for Black people where we can do our own healing. But I also believe that other communities need to do their work. So, you know, white folks need to come together and call each other out on some of the white supremacist thinking and beliefs and values that show up in behaviors or attitudes about other people of color. And then as we do that and begin to honor that healing work, we can begin to have more intentional conversations, and they need to happen, right, across racial groups about what is really going on and ways that we can help each other.
How much of a role does adequate or affordable health insurance play in all of this?
Well, that's a big one. And, you know, in terms of people having access to the resources that they need to get the help that they need, whether that's healthcare related or specifically mental health resources. But the other piece of the coin or side of the coin is recognizing that even within the healthcare system, that there's disparities that occur, that there's unequal treatment that occurs, that, you know, there's still beliefs and stereotypes, for example, that Black people don't really experience pain to the same degree that white folks do or other people do. And so there's, again, awareness and consciousness building that has to happen across all layers. I'm really grateful that here in Sacramento County, that Sacramento County Behavioral Health Services has taken it upon themselves with a lot of pushing and support from the community to do so, but is offering free mental health resources and has created a trauma and wellness informed project specifically targeting the Black community. And so I'm having efforts like that are happening within cities and statewide and across the country can allow for folks to get the services that they need. And then, you know, developing programs and supporting folks of color and Black people that can become future therapists and physicians and healthcare providers, so that we can have access to people who look like us, who may understand and kind of get the experiences that we're having, because there's a lot of distrust with the system, with accessing services, if in particular you don't feel like you're going to be heard or seen.
Dr. Christy Hagens with Safe Black Space, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
We also want to let you know that on capradio.org, we have an article posted on African-American mental health. In the article, Cap Radio Sammy Kayola, she put together really just an extensive list of resources available that specialize in healing from racial trauma and provide culturally tailored mental health services for the African-American community. And Safe Black Space is on that article. Again, you could find that on our website right now at capradio.org. And our race and equity reporter, Sarah Mises-Tan, just a reminder, she will be hosting a live conversation this evening, Sacramento after the Chauvin conviction. And you could find that on capradio.org. That live conversation will take place at 6:30 p.m. That is Insight for today. You can learn more about our guests at capradio.org/insight. You can also subscribe to the Insight podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you to producers Cynthia Lopez and Kyle McKinnon, with managing editor Aram Sarkissian. Our digital team is Chris Hagen, Emily Zentner, Helga Salinas, and Megan Minata. Insight's technical director is Mark Jones, and our engineer is Antonio Munez. Joe Barr is Cap Radio's chief content officer. And I'm Vicky Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.